How much to the Buddha? How much to the Dharma? How much to the Sangha? Good morning, everyone. There's a koan that I've been thinking about a lot lately because it seems really central to my practice right now. It's case 43 from the Blue Cliff Record. Dongshan's no heat or no cold or heat. Dongshan is Tozan Ryokai in our traditional ancestral line. This is 9th century China. This is a famous story. It's been commented on for hundreds of years, and we hear it referenced regularly. And now here it is in the middle of my life. Here's the case, the central story. A monk asked Dongshan, "When cold and heat come, how can we avoid them?" Dongshan said, "Why don't you go to the place where there's no cold or heat?" The monk said, "What is that place where there's no cold or heat?" Dongshan said, "When it's cold, the cold kills you. When it's hot, the heat kills you." A funny thing happened when I was writing this talk or thinking about it. I had decided that I wanted to talk about this koan, and I'd started putting down some thoughts about it, and then I thought, oh, I have to read the chapter for our book group. This was last Tuesday. And I opened up the book, and the chapter was on non-opposition. And it started with this koan. I mean, just like serendipitously, right? I was just like so taken aback by that. It was like Kyogen, was sort of waiting for me along the path, and I'd come around the bend, and there he was, and he said, "Oh, you're thinking about this? Well, yeah, I've been thinking about it too, and here's what I think about it." So, I would like to share some of his words. He shares that conversation that I just read. And then he says, at that point, the monk had an understanding. This killing here means the self that arises in opposition to circumstance, saying, "I don't want this. I don't want this." If one surrenders to it, the heat kills the self in opposition. When we surrender to the condition as it is, self and other disappears. We drop beneath it to the place of no cold or heat. The place of no cold or heat is the place of no opposition to any condition. What this really means is that the self that is in opposition to the cold and heat can die. Our opposition to what is right in front of us can just drop away or die. When we let go of this self, this opposition, then instead of, "I am so cold, I am suffering," it's just cold. There's a profound shift there of just this. I find myself thinking of that monk's first question quite often. How can I avoid that discomfort of cold or heat or however discomfort looks in my life? What can I do differently so I don't have to feel that pain or dissatisfaction? I can find myself stuck in the second noble truth of grasping and aversion. Feel like I don't want things to be the way that they are right now. It would be much better if they were different, maybe just a little bit different. Maybe I would be content or at least satisfied enough if things were just a little bit different. How different would they have to be? What is the experience that I would be willing to have? There's no way to get moment after moment to be exactly the way we would like it. That's the first thing the Buddha taught. It's not always going to be the way you want it to be. Even so, I still find myself thinking that if only I could control my experience, if I were better at controlling it, I would be happy or happier. That somehow the degree of happiness correlates with the degree of control. Of course, sometimes that's true. Dinner is going to be a happier experience if you don't burn it or forget the salt. What if you do burn it? Then what? When we think this situation isn't to my liking, isn't exactly the way I would like it to be, we put ourselves in opposition, separating ourselves from our experience, squarely in second noble truth territory. But this situation that isn't the way I would like it to be, this is exactly my path. My path, right now, is having this situation, having exactly these challenges. This is exactly my practice right now. So how can I meet myself as I am right now, meet my life as it is right now? In this koan, Dongshan is reminding us that there is a third noble truth and a fourth. There's a path forward towards greater freedom, greater clarity, towards realizing who we truly are. He's telling us that we can turn towards things that we might want to avoid. We can turn into what we consider unpleasant or painful or threatening. Be willing to see it and accept it into our life. How is it if I don't turn away? If I don't try to separate myself from what's going on? How is it if I look simply, feel simply, without judgment or anger or resentment? And how is it if I bring compassion to that looking? A little softening, a little tenderness that might allow me to be curious about my experience. What's this like? How is this experience of discomfort? What's the flavor of it? How does it feel in my body? And how is that experience of turning away, refusing it? How does that feel? Can I bring compassion to that person who feels the need to separate, to protect? In metta practice, loving kindness practice, we start by turning inwards towards our own experience with a wish for our own happiness. And then we reach out with wishes for the happiness of others, of all beings. There are many ways to express this, but in my own metta practice, ease is something that I always think of. The ease of being at home in my body and mind. The ease of welcoming my experience home to my heart. Welcoming my life. Being willing to experience things as they are. May I be at ease. May all beings be at ease. Our practice isn't always easy, but the bodhisattvas on our three altars are here to help us, each in their own way. The echo of the special Kanzeon ceremony says, all accepting Kanzeon is the gateway to Buddha mind. In Kanzeon, we are one with Buddha in cause and effect, related to all Buddhas, to Dharma, and to Sangha. Our true nature is eternal, joyous, selfless, and pure. All accepting Kanzeon hears all the cries of the world, the despairing ones, the lonely ones, the angry and hateful ones. And she doesn't turn away from any of them. She is present, hearing, and always reminding us of the compassion that is our true nature. Courage is needed to be willing to hear all those cries, the cries of the world and our own cries and what's underneath them. Budo, over here, can help. He has vowed to practice in hell until all beings are free. Can I be willing to be thoroughly cold when it's cold, thoroughly hot when it's hot? Can I be willing to walk through this world and experience all its sharpness, its disappointment, its grief, as well as its beauty and joy? To be intimate with the world as it truly is. Sometimes it's really hard. And Fudo demonstrates courage for us. He says, I'm here with you. Your experience is mine. And Manjushri on our main altar sits on a lion throne, the throne of the self, a being human, with all our strengths and weaknesses, all our karma. And he sits there in non-opposition, at ease with what it means to be human. And with that ease, that acceptance, the lion throne becomes the throne of wisdom. We practice this non-opposition in Zazen. The nature of our Zazen is being awake, present without grasping, seeing and letting go. Things arise and fall. We can't hold on to them or change them to be to our liking. Things are as they are. We have to be willing to touch what arises, to let it into our heart. Having touched, having accepted, then we can open the hand of thought and let it go. Kakumyo once said, letting go is hard, but it's pretty much what we do. It's just one sentence, but it's kind of been my marching order since. Why is it pretty much what we do? We're letting go of all the stuff that has accrued to our idea of who we are. Little by little, the stuff falls away, and their true picture emerges: eternal, joyous, selfless, pure. It's so much better, so much freer. Acceptance isn't the same as resignation. It means I'm not separate from this situation. That requires us to hold our experience and our resistance to it together, to find an appropriate response. If I can turn toward that experience, be that, contain all of that, then the separate self is killed by heat and cold, no longer separate. Willing for things to be as they are, letting go of opposition. Acceptance doesn't mean that we don't care about our own suffering or someone else's suffering. It doesn't mean that all the difficult feelings, such as fear or anger, worry, outrage, don't arise. It does mean that we don't have to cling to them. If we can take some positive, skillful action, it's good to do that. Acceptance means that we can act from a place of clarity rather than reactivity. You might be familiar with the Vajrayana practice of Tonglen. It's a radical kind of non-opposition. In Tonglen, we breathe in the pain and suffering of the world, including our own. It's the opposite of what we might be tempted to do to avoid suffering. Instead, we accept it and welcome it with compassion. And then we breathe out that compassion and healing, sending it out into the world. There's a moment during that process of transformation. We breathe in suffering, difficulty, and then something happens. There's a transformation that takes place, and we're able to breathe out healing and goodwill and comfort, loving kindness. I think it's really valuable to pay attention to that moment of transformation. I find it is. Letting go, non-opposition, acceptance. This is serious practice. Where do we start? In our book group on Tuesday, someone said that they had realized that Dharma gates are always right here. I think they had thought that the Dharma gates were like some special out there things, you know, fancy something. But they said, no, the Dharma gate is right here, right with my experience, never apart from this very place, says Dogen. There's no place else to start. We don't have some mundane part of our life and then some other special part where we practice. Everything in our everyday activities can be enlightened activity when we see it that way. So we start here, whatever we're doing, in the awareness of the present moment. Thich Nhat Hanh was very good at reminding us of this. So here's a quote. This is from The Miracle of Mindfulness. If, while washing the dishes, we think only of the cup of tea that awaits us, thus hurrying to get the dishes out of the way as if they were a nuisance, then we are not washing the dishes to wash the dishes. What's more, we are not alive during the time we are washing the dishes. In fact, we are completely incapable of realizing the miracle of life while standing at the sink. If we can't wash the dishes, chances are we won't be able to drink our tea either. While drinking the cup of tea, we will only be thinking of other things, barely aware of the cup in our hands. Thus, we are sucked away into the future, and we are incapable of actually living 1 minute of life. Dharma gates are always right here, in this very place. I would like to share a few more words of Kyogen's in closing. The Tao Te Ching says, those who study learning gain every day, while those who study the Tao, the way, lose day by day. They lose and lose until there is nothing left to lose. With nothing left to lose, there is nothing left undone. This is releasing and letting go over and over, releasing our attachments, letting go of anything extra until our hands are empty. And those empty, open hands hold the universe. When we're no longer clutching this little bit or that little bit, there is just open-handed connection with everything. Of course, we're never really apart from any of it for a second, but now we know the difference between flowing with it and resisting it. We know how that feels. Thank you.
There's now time for a Q&A. And if you're in the room, you can raise your hand and I'll bring the microphone to you. And before you ask your question or share your comments, please say your name. And if you're on Zoom, you can put your name, typing it into the chat, and then you can be unmuted to ask your question, or you can just type your question or comment into the chat and it will be read aloud for you.
Hi, I'm Guy. Thank you for your talk. When you mentioned Tonglen and described that, I suddenly remembered something, time when I was in college and I had parked my bike outside the library and I had an expensive bike light on the bike and I came back out and it was gone. And I remember this was before I had really learned anything about Buddhism, but I saw the bike light gone and I suddenly got very angry and I thought, I can't afford to replace this thing. This was too expensive. And I was so angry, I suddenly thought to myself, I'll just steal someone else's light. And I was really shocked that I had this thought because I don't think of myself as a thief, you know? And at the time, and I had heard the word karma, but I didn't really know what it meant. But and I realized years later, wow, that's karma, you know? But just even not even realizing that that was karma that, you know, I was in the cycle of, I was so chastened by the thought that, oh, I'm going to steal someone else's light. I was horrified by the thought of that because I don't want to do that, of course. And I thought, you know, I got to do something to like counteract this somehow. So I thought, you know, okay, I'm just going to like donate to the library to, you know, because I got to put something positive out in the world to counteract this. I just felt like I didn't know anything about Buddhism at the time, but I thought, you know, got to counteract this somehow. And when you were describing Tonglen, I thought, just now, well, maybe that was Tonglen that I was practicing without knowing it. You know, it was like Monsieur Jourdain, who, you know, writes poetry, writes prose or speaks prose without knowing it, you know. So maybe I was doing Tonglen without knowing it. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know if it was that, but it was something good. So thank you.
Thank you.
This is Amy. I have a 7-year-old and I took him to the bakery and I got him a hot chocolate and a cinnamon roll and we had whatever, we were having a nice time. And then he wanted a smoothie. And I was like, no, that's just like, I just gave you all the things that you wanted. And he was like, you didn't give me everything I wanted. And I was like, this is, I had this moment of like, trying to, like, you are having, you're in opposition to this thing, like this, like, Buddhist parenting, like, this is suffering, and you are, you know, like, and then we're fighting, we're, like, arguing, and he goes, well, you adults get everything that they want. Like, in his mind, it's not fair because I can decide when I get this, right? So he said that, and it kind of threw me off. And then I was like, I am in opposition to him being in opposition. Like, and then I thought, this is just, he is having an experience that we are all always having all the time of, like, it didn't come exactly to my liking, and therefore, like, I'm unhappy. And then I was also realizing, like, I wanted to have this this experience of him being satisfied by me being such a good mom or whatever I was thinking. And I just was really struck by, like, why are we all like this? Like, every single one of us is doing this, like, all the time, and then being unhappy, and then, like, making other people the cause of our unhappy because it didn't come exactly how we want or whatever. I don't know. Just, yeah. I mean, I think my question is, like, why are we all like this?
I am not qualified to answer that question.
I don't know. You don't have to answer. I just...
Greed, hatred, and delusion? I don't know. It is the question, isn't it? I'm sorry. But I want to know how your story ended.
Oh, how it ended?
Yeah.
We bicker. We're like a bickering style, you know. I let him continue, like, I let him have his back and forth about it. I don't, like, shut it down, but then I also, you know, try to, like, Seinfeld him a little bit, and it goes on for a while. And then when we kind of just, like, I could tell that then he was feeling like, I have shame. Like, he was like, I'm not fun to be around, because I have this experience of, like, when you're like this, you're just not fun to be around. And then he's like, oh, like, he had, like, shame. I'm not fun to be around. Mm-hmm. And then I felt terrible about that. So then I just try to, like, move on from it, of, like, not hold it over him or, like, keep it tense like that, and move on to something more lighthearted, and try not to just, like, let it become, like, so fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, we're having an experience, we argue, and now we're just going to, like, keep it moving. And then in my head, I was like, you being attached to his experience being positive is, like, a codependent, right? Like, you being in opposition to him not having the experience you want is you not, right? It's, you're doing the same thing he's doing. So just, like, talking to myself about that. But I do it constantly, right? It's like every day is that.
It's life with a 7-year-old.
Yeah.
This is Andy. Thank you for your talk. You used the phrase skillful means, taking action through skillful means. That was, I find it, can you help me figure out where that boundary is between acceptance, letting go, because that, I find that that's a slippery slope to non-action, to just, oh, well, here I'm just going to sit here and the world's going to happen. But I know that I have to take skillful means. So the boundary of sort of boundary between those two things can be difficult to ascertain sometimes. So could you say a few words about that?
First of all, acceptance is not resignation. They don't feel the same. No, and they don't, I think, come from the same place. And it's hard to know. You know, it's hard to know what we can do, what we should do. And so there's always this process of discernment. And I don't think that acceptance and taking skillful action are in conflict. I think they work together. Does that help?
It does. I think of the precepts 4, 5, 6.
Okay.
Stop doing things, you know, come from a good place, then do good. So maybe that's attached here. So attached. I like that word. Great.
Yeah.
Related.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Laughing a little because when Gyoshi and I did the precepts class last year, he would always refer to them by their number, and I would just go like, yeah, it doesn't work that way for me.
Well, 1, 2, and 3, that works.
Yeah, I was reflecting after Amy's comment. I think a lot of people know that my mom recently passed, and when she died, I really was kind of blown away by the awareness of attachment by those around her. And I just had this thought that like being in this body is like to be attached, like having this body is to like suffer. And it was surprising because it sounds a little puritanical to me. Like that's not really like my practice. It's a little more about like life and vitality. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about like guarding my sense gates or things like that. But I did have this kind of deep sense of like, oh, like this is attachment, like having this body, just having it, like it wants it, you know? So I think that there's something about those teachings that we find maybe in the Pali Canon more that still speak to me around just this body.
It's impermanent. And loving something and being aware of the impermanence of it, the changing nature of it, is it's just hard. Even our own bodies and the people that we love and our life and this world. I don't have any good ideas about that. Well, sure, I've got plenty, but it's all of our practice, really.
Very tough. Hi, this is Genko. Well, what's come up for me when I've been hearing these stories about conflict is the parable of the arrow. Because, and I was there one time. I was like, I think when I was at Tassajara, and I just, at some point, I don't even know what triggered it, but at some point it was like, all right, I want to know who shot that arrow. I want to know whose idea was this thing about, why do we have to suffer all the time? And I want to know everything about that. And I knew while I was having this kind of rant, internal rant, that was ridiculous. But if you look at the parable and how it goes, then at some point you have to realize, but that's all just opposition. That's all trying to avoid what's going on. And what really needs to happen is you need to get the arrow out. So my sense about this question about acceptance is that you have to accept this is the situation and this is what's really required here. Because I think the anger is coming from, I'm trying to fix this and make it go away, as opposed to, you know, what really would be helpful here? And how can I... And a lot of times what you have to do that business of like taking it all in, like you say, and letting the heat kill you before you can figure out what makes the most sense to do about it. So I don't know, for some reason, that's what's coming up for me when I'm hearing all this. I don't know if that's helpful for anybody else, but it was a revelation to me that I had. This is very much like what Guy was saying, too. It's kind of like your first impulse. It's like, I got to get somebody for this, you know, and it's, you know, well, maybe, you know, I think making a donation to the library is actually pretty skillful means. Why not?
Right. That first thought of wanting to know who did this, who is responsible, what went wrong here, You know, why are things the way they are? It sidetracks us. Yeah. Well, thank you for mentioning that story. It's a good one.
Thank you for your talk. This is Mikio. So I've been experiencing pretty significant memory loss, and I don't remember really nice time I spent with like my wife a month ago, or a year ago, 5 years ago. And she knows it, and I can see that sometimes she looks sad about that. But then I thought, oh, you know, I'm recognizing it. I've been talking about it intellectually, yes. But I don't have like feelings and emotion around it. Is that just realized listening to your talk, I just realized that I'm just completely suppressing. Because I can see it in her, but why don't I see it in me? So I just realized that, okay, there's something there that significant that I am still ignoring. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Mikio, for sharing.
Thank you, Shinya. This is Christina. I found your talk so practical and helpful, so thank you for that. And I was appreciating how you brought up the Thich Nhat Hanh, just the mindfulness in daily life, because I was like, oh, right, that's a practice that one can have and I've had before. And I think, well, in the past, I've had like many different practices to like try and bring some of this home, right? And not, yeah, see the Dharma gates that are always there. And some of those have worked and some not. And in the last couple of years, I've like abandoned that whole idea. And I don't know if there, I'm wondering. So I think abandoning it is kind of good. I'm just like as a non-opposition to like, I'm not really doing it anyway. And maybe stuff is just going to come through, or those moments arise naturally and not trying to force it. But I'm wondering if there's any like home practice that you found really helpful and sustainable.
Yeah, washing dishes.
Yeah, I do a lot of definitely lots of washing dishes.
Well, I mean, that is no different from Zazen.
Yeah.
Right? When we're sitting Zazen, our minds go off someplace and we bring them back. So why not do that when you're washing the dishes or folding the laundry? I mean, you can't always, you know, you're having a heated discussion with your son and you're just going to bring whatever skillful means you can to that, and you're not going to start, you know, thinking, oh, I'm having a heated discussion with my son. Well, you might. But I feel like that's kind of what life is like. At least for me, it's kind of like that. Like coming back to this present moment. Oh, coming back to this present moment. Open the refrigerator. Coming back to the present moment. And just like being as alive as I can be in that moment.
Yeah. And then how do you remember to do that?
Practice, I think. Zazen. I can text you every now and then. Christina, are you? Oh, I think this is the last one. I'm kind of fading.
Hi, Shinyu. Thank you for your talk. This is Sarah. I really like that quote that you read in the book about the Tao, saying that we let go, we let go, we let go until we have nothing to let go of anymore. And that just stuck with me when I read it. And I'm so glad that you reread it today, because it is a practice for me daily, driving in traffic here. You know, I was being cut off and I had to take a detour, and I was just like, oh, I'm, you know, going to be late for the talk. I want to get here because I came for the talk. And I just had to let it go and let it go and just like, well, I'll get there when I get there. But I realized that, you know, I grew up in this very competitive family with all these brothers and dad who were kind of bullies and teased me a lot. And one of my first thoughts is to be defensive. And I it's really I'm really quick to defend myself, I realize. And that's something that I've been working on letting go of. That's a big thing for me. It's like, I don't need to feel that I am inadequate, or I need to prove myself or win. So when I first read that, the letting go, letting go, letting go, until there's nothing else to let go of, it sounded like lose, lose, lose. But it isn't, actually. It's kind of a win, win, win for me. It's kind of like letting go, letting go. And then you have this freedom of being, as it goes on to say, being open-hearted, open-handed, to not know what's going to happen and meet it. And I'm really enjoying that practice. So I'm glad to be reminded. Thank you.
Thank you.